Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva's first choice for NPR News.
On April 2nd, voters in Salisbury will go to the polls in what could be a major shift in local government. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush, and the top race, of course, is for mayor, with incumbent Jim Ireton facing off against the local blogger Joe Albaro. So we begin our show with the challenger, Joe, and appreciate you coming in and talking with us here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Don.
Well, let me. You're the challenger, as I mentioned a moment ago, and basically what you're asking is you're asking voters to change horses, as it were, from one leadership to another. And one of the things that struck me just recently, the mayor had his State of the City address, and he listed a number of accomplishments. So let's go through some of this real quick. For instance, he says, you know, well, they tore down the Lennon's of the Week building, the Thrift Travel Inn, the Feldman's building was redeveloped, the wastewater treatment plant, the lawsuit that's been now settled, a major drop, for instance, in crime rate, about 40% is what he said. Bateman Street and Only Road, that has been completed. And the Riverwalk, there's about $500,000 it's going to go for repairs. That's the kinds of accomplishments that he discussed in his State of the City. So why is it that voters should choose you over Jim Ireton?
Well, first of all, Feldman's is not redeveloped. That's a big start. Secondly, and this is where I've had an issue from the beginning, you generalize crime being down 40%. Crime is down 40% crime is down 40% on part one crime.
Mm-hmm.
Theft, right. Burglary is through the roof. So crime in general, when the media gets out there and speaks about crime being down 40%, the media is misleading the public. That's absolutely incorrect. We're grateful that part one crime is down 40%, but part one crimes around the nation are down dramatically.
So why is it that they should say vote for you as opposed to voting for the incumbent?
My plans are completely different from Mr. Ireton. I think it's important for people to realize that the current mayor and former mayor and mayors before have run the city on a part-time basis, okay? And what I've talked to people in general about is, say, the city has a $51 million a year budget. And you talk to any business person or someone running a big corporation, there is absolutely no way that the city or that corporation or CEO of any of the companies that would be out there in the $51 million range could ever do so part-time. You can't understand your customer base. You can't grow your business. There's no way anybody could turn around and convince me that you could do so and understand your staff, know your staff, know your customers' wants and needs, the whole nine yards, that you need to run a business on a part-time basis. So my pledge has been to turn around and say, look, I'm going to do this job full time, no extra pay. I'll still do it at the $25,000 a year. The other problem that we've seen in Salisbury, me versus the mayor, has been economic development. You have companies packing up and leaving the city like there's no tomorrow, going all the way back to Dresser Wayne and Campbell Soup and big, decent paying jobs and big companies that provided great income for the city. The mayor and former mayor have been waiting for businesses to fall in their lap. Jim Ireton is a government employee and has been his entire life. He's never been in business. I spent 20 plus years as running a big manufacturing company. I know what it takes to run a business. I know what it takes to keep customers satisfied and pleased and grow my business. And I'll be able to bring that to the table. I plan on being the mayor half the time, so to speak, and the chief economic development director for the city of Salisbury. I'm going to go to other communities. I'm going to reach out to these businesses. And what I said this the other day in a forum that I think is important for people to know. The forum was loaded with 75 business owners in Salisbury. And I said, you know, a lot of you are from here. Someone like myself is a come here. But the difference between you and I is I've been there. And what I mean by been there is I had a manufacturing company on the Western Shore. I was paying $16 a square foot for warehouse space. When I found that I could get space here, brand new facility, tall ceilings in a warehouse, great location to have a distribution center, and relocated here to the Eastern Shore, it was $2-3 a square foot. So what the from here's don't recognize is how expensive it is elsewhere. If you come here and bring your businesses and manufacturing, the payroll is a whole lot less, but it's incredibly great paying jobs here for the Shore. Okay, I can go out to these stem cell research companies and reach out to them and say, you know, let me show you the savings you can achieve like I did when I relocated here. So there's incredible advantages. It's just that we can't do it on a part-time mayor basis. You just can't accomplish the things that need to be done on a part-time level.
How would you attract businesses? I mean, you're quite right to say that there was certainly an emphasis, certainly during the Berry administrations, at least as I recall, in which there was an emphasis on developing residential areas, the idea that people would come and therefore business would follow. How, you obviously, from what you've written, said, no, you don't think that works. How would you attract, pull in businesses into Salisbury?
Well, like I was saying earlier, you have to put together a plan that shows the real estate that's currently available that has already been developed here. We have a lot of open warehouse space, manufacturing space, and so forth. You have to put that package together along with what are the real estate costs? What are the taxes for those properties? Should they buy it and develop it? But the key factor, Don, is this. Salisbury is so business unfriendly. I mean, you know, when I did my announcement that I was running for mayor, I did it in front of Danny Burt's Concrete Company. And while it wasn't the most glorious place in the world to do it, we wanted to show in the background this skeleton of cast iron beams sitting there, framed in, ready to go. They have been sitting there for 3 years. He's waiting for permits. You have a gentleman I met a few weeks ago who had bought a city property, city lot, residential lot, built a home on it, and has been waiting 2 years for his use and occupancy permit. I mean, this is ridiculous. We have to restructure how business is done in the city of Salisbury. You wouldn't want to buy a piece of property and have to sit on it for 2 or 3 years making payments. You know, this is the other problem we had with River's Edge. A lot of people are not aware that River's Edge wasn't hit by a bad economy. River's Edge, the bank gave up on that project because it was taking so long to get permits. You only have a certain time frame. You have different stages that you get paid from the bank to move on to the next level and build the next level, so to speak. It was taking so long in the city, the bank pulled the plug.
So how are you going to shorten that time?
We're going to sharpen our pencils and go back to the drawing board and make sure that things are shortened. What's the reason for it taking 2 to 3 years? You won't find that in any other community that you're going to go to.
And that's really, really what I'm asking you.
It's remanaging those departments. Mm-hmm. Remanage. Find out why. I can't speak to these department heads. The mayor won't allow me to speak to any department head. So it's been very, very difficult. All I can do is talk to, and unfortunately some of it's one-sided. But when you hear enough business people out there saying it's taken 2-3 years, you know, Palmer Gillis has had the same situation numerous times in the city of Salisbury. Salisbury is very business unfriendly. We have to restructure that, remanage it, re-put it back together again, and move forward. But you can't do so part-time. Jim's got so many things on his plate to get done on a regular basis, it just can't get complete. And the proper attention needs to be placed on, I believe, economic development first. That has to be done. We have to rebuild in order to draw people out here and get people to move here, get these jobs going, good paying jobs. Look, what we're seeing now is pharmacies popping up everywhere. This is part-time jobs. This is minimum wage jobs. We're not bringing in good. It might look good on that location. The building might look fairly nice and more modern in Salisbury. But the bottom line is we're not bringing in good paying jobs. And the more we keep doing that, the more we have to tax people. And that's what I'm firmly, firmly against.
How much responsibility do you think does the city council have in this? Because there are a number of projects that have come before it. There have been delays. I've talked to business people myself who find that their projects are delayed or not acted upon. How much responsibility does the council have as opposed to the mayor?
Well, I don't know if it really gets to the council. There are some projects that are property owned by the city, I'll agree with you on. But when it comes to individual corporations or private people, it never gets to the council. They never see that.
So what would you do then to streamline this thing? I mean, what kind of things would you be doing? Would you have some kind of economic office? What would you do?
Well, I would like to work side by side with SWED,
which is the
economic and development portion of Wicomico County per se. You know, they specialize in certain areas of economic development, like retail. They're not so educated on per se. They don't do well in certain particular areas, and they openly admit to that. We've got to create that marriage, get a better understanding, and find a way that we can all work together to draw these businesses out here.
So what would you do? We mentioned a moment ago about things that the city owns. We have the Linens of the Week, obviously. We have the bricks, for example. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about those?
It's unfortunate. I mean, we've got the old fire station.
Yes.
That's sitting and sitting and sitting.
I mean, there was an opportunity, I think, sometime back. There was some partnership with UMS and so on, but none of this goes anywhere.
Well, it's unfortunate, Don. I mean, it's a very unique situation with that building, if we can, real quick. First of all, I find it ridiculous that a municipality can sell a piece of property and tell the business owner, the purchaser, what they can or can't put in that building. Okay? As long as it fits within code, they should be able to put whatever they want in that building. But in this particular case, they created law that only allows what the council wants. And I find that absolutely ridiculous. It's out of line. The city's gaining too much control. You know, we could have probably sold that building 50 times over for good money. I offered to buy it for $250,000 cash with no contingencies. I was going to work with, I used to own Station 7 in Pittsville. I sold that to Todd Wampler. When I went to offer $250,000 for the building, I asked Todd if he would build another Station 7 in that location. We came to an agreement. I went and made the offers to the city, and Barry Tillman and Gary Comegy said they wouldn't sell me that building. They wouldn't sell me any property in the city of Salisbury. What's important to know now is, even though Palmer Gillis came in, mind you, $250,000, he offered $100,000 for the building, got it, okay? The deal fell through. He's now gone in with a new RFP on that particular location. I don't know what the totals are, probably around $100,000. Guess what they want to put in there now? Station 7. So I offered $250,000 years ago for the same building, and they're right back to square one with something I came up with years ago.
Well, what about the bricks and linens?
The bricks, I've said this from the very beginning, need to tear it down. Tear it down. If anything needs to be done there, maybe they can rebuild and put up new condos in that particular location. But to spend $250,000, $300,000 per unit and get $300 a month in rent, it's putting good money after bad money, Don.
So what would you do in order to get somebody to buy that property or property like Linens of the Week? I mean, what is it that the city is going to offer? I mean,
does the city have to offer? I mean, the bottom line is...
right? So it's got to do something, right?
Well, the city owns the old firehouse, too.
That's right.
I mean, you know, we're sitting on numerous properties that, you know, Mayor Ireton brings up a good point as far as the parking lots downtown. I'm all against selling any parking lot. Riverfront's a different idea, though. I'm very supportive of Riverfront. I think we should build some high-end condos, market them to the doctors that now have to live within a 20-mile radius of the hospital, be perfect for them, and we can build beautiful high-end units along the river. But affordable housing units and so forth, no, I'm firmly against that.
Now, there was actually a recent piece in the Daily Times talking about vacant housing. And one of the things it noted is that in Salisbury, it's doubled over the last 10 years from 5.7 to 10.6%, rising faster than the nation, faster in terms of percentage than even the state of Maryland. On the west side of the neighborhood, there's something like a 15.7% vacancy. What would you do about vacant housing?
Well, we're going to have a couple of problems in that department because I think with even SU, a lot of colleges within the next 10 or 15 years – I think the attendance is going to be smaller and smaller, okay? You've got online educations and degrees that you can get that are far less expensive. You don't have to send your kid from Baltimore to Salisbury and put them up in housing and so forth. So you're going to see even more houses on the market, Don, down the road. As we expand over time, you're going to see a lot of these rental units that are going to pop up on the market. What I'm trying to do, again, is let's go back to that economic development director position where I'm going to go out to Rockville, I'm going to go out to PG County, I'm going to go out to Anne Arundel County and so forth, introduce the advantages of why it's so inexpensive to operate business here and only be 30 minutes from the beach. The main factor that comes into that is, you know, I had a home in Davidsonville, and that home's probably worth $1.4 million today. That particular house, if you were to find it in Salisbury, would probably be around $250,000, $300,000. So the savings is astronomical once people know about it. And here's another factor. When Sandy hit New Jersey, do you have any idea how packed Salisbury is and it's going to be this summer? The people that came down here from Jersey and are looking into getting condos for the week are finding it's half or a third of what it would be in New Jersey. There are incredible advantages here. We just have to introduce it to the rest of the states that surround us.
I mean, is there anything you can do? If you've got a house that's it's not breaking code, but it's been there for 3-4 years. It's not being occupied. Obviously, it lowers the property values of those people who are around it. What can the city do?
Continue to market, like I'm saying, and draw people here as best as you can. You've got to make sure you've got crime under control to draw those people here. You know, I'm not God. I can't create miracles. I can just do the best that I can do on a full-time basis with the knowledge and experience that I've had for many years.
So, and also there's a lot of rentals. And in some of the neighborhood, I saw something like 60% or something of the housing stock is rental. And that's been a concern. Certainly it's been a concern by the particularly of several of the city council members. What would you do would you try to decrease the number of rentals in the city? I know that's been a very concern, particularly out in the Camden neighborhoods and some of the older neighborhoods. They see some of these houses being converted. What would you do?
Well, you know, the bottom line is I don't think the mayor has total control of that. What we can do, again, is just market Salisbury as best as we can. I think you're going to see a lot of these rental units going back on the market for sale rather than continue. As I'm saying, over the next 10 or 15 years, you're going to see less and less students renting those homes.
So what do you think? Is it possible these things are going to wind up being vacant?
I'm sure they are. There's a lot of them right now that are vacant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's the jobs, Don? What have we seen in the last 16 years?
Because a lot of people look for that. Would you favor any kind of clampdown on the rentals per se? I mean, you and I talked a little earlier about the 4-2 was the 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
The current mayor's obviously offered up a series of legislation not only dealing with activities in some of these rentals, but also the idea that perhaps some of these houses should not be rentals. Got the backing, as a matter of fact, of some of the council members, even though it has not passed. What would you do at all?
Well,
would you try
I think,
to clamp out on any of that?
I think the key here is, okay, overall, whether you're in a commercial property or whether you're in a residential property, without jobs, Don, without good-paying jobs, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen at all. Once we start redeveloping downtown, for example, and there's only a limited amount of real estate in downtown, that property value is going to go up. The more we bring jobs into this community, good paying manufacturing jobs, whatever they may be, once they come in, property values will go up. They'll be bidding for homes at that point in time. There's none of that going on now. I mean, they're going bidding, but they're bidding in the wrong direction. They want better pricing than what it's listed for. So you have to create the right economic market for all of Salisbury. Make it the most attractive city that you possibly can. We have incredible things to offer in downtown Salisbury. It's just not been utilized.
What would you do to revitalize downtown that predecessors, if you were elected mayor, haven't done?
We discussed that the last time. I want to make the downtown plaza more of an entertainment district. You know, we need to expand that and create an area that is a destination location. More of the bars, restaurants, diners, cafes along the plaza area, for example, and create that as a destination location. That will, once we get that going, and it's already started, once we continue to keep that going, and there's another restaurant that's getting ready to open up down there as well, the more we get that moving, the more people are going to want to compete to buy the next available piece of real estate that's downtown, because there's only so much. Once you get enough businesses down there and create that destination location, the property values go through the roof. What's left? And as soon as one pops on the market, someone's going to dive into it. So that's how you do it. You got to excite the market. You can't do that on a part-time basis. You just can't. It's impossible.
What would you see your relationship to the council? I mean, in one of your papers, you talk about the idea that the council has to keep its pledges, has to honor whatever previous commitments. And there's been some back and forth about that on the council as to whether or not the council majority has done that or not. What is that relationship, do you think, going to be like? And how much of that will then mean you're showing leadership as opposed to simply deferring to a legislative body?
Well, I think what you have to do, first of all, Don, is this. What we've had with Jim Ireton and Barry Tillman in the past, you know, the public's not really aware of how things were actually delivered to the council in many, many, many cases. I, as the new mayor of Salisbury, will, first of all, change the structure of how things are done. In other words, when a project comes to my table, it hits my desk, the council president will be involved. No matter who that person is, will be involved from the ground floor. It will be the council president's responsibility to go back to the rest of the council and inform them of the direction that we're researching on that particular project. What we've had with Barry Tillman and Jim Ireton in the past is too many times things are brought at the 11th hour Friday at 4:30 in the afternoon, usually after council members have come in to get their mail for the day or what's in their mailbox in the city, and they put projects in there to vote on Monday or changes to projects for Monday. And it doesn't allow them the time to do their due diligence. I'm not going to play that game. It's not going to happen ever. You have my word on that, and I'm saying that publicly. It will not happen unless it's an emergency, but I'll make sure the council is far more involved on every project that's brought to the city. That's how you resolve that conflict that we've seen for so many years with the council and the mayor's office.
How much time would you give them to deal with a legislative proposal? How do you see that? I realize that trying to come up with specific time limits obviously depends on the project, but I mean, how would that work? Would you meet with individuals? Would you, you know, meet with them in work sessions? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense about what that working relationship is going to be.
Well, I guess it would depend on the severity of the time frame for each project. I can't see why so many projects have to be rushed in at the last minute. I can tell you that there have been projects that I know that have been worked on for a year, and the council wasn't aware of it until the last minute when they brought it together. You know, part of the bike trail was that problem with that recently. The 12 firefighters was brought to them at the last minute. You know, I'm not trying to defend the council in any way, shape, or form, but, you know, you have to have plenty of good quality time to do your due diligence. Again, if I bring it to them, Don, this is important, they'll have as much time as I'll have. How's that? I mean, if it comes to my desk and I have the council president that day involved in each project that comes across my desk each day, the council's going to have just as much time to research and do the work on that as the mayor will.
One of the big issues, by the way, for the council and for a number of the council members has been the idea of city incentives for businesses and so on to come in. Very skeptical about handing out any of those kinds of things. I mean, I can tell you that. What kind of incentives would you offer up to businesses to come in? Would it be just simply enterprise zones? Are there grant? What is it that you would be offering?
Don, I'm a real firm believer. First of all, I think a lot of the public isn't aware of just how incredible relocating to an enterprise zone that Salisbury has is for a business. You know, you talk about first year 90% reduction in taxes, second year 80%, and et cetera, et cetera. There are fabulous advantages to moving in an enterprise zone. We need to fill the space that we currently have. Expanding these enterprise zones, you know, O'Malley just offered that to us and expanded our enterprise zones right now. Just last month he did that. I really think it's unnecessary at this point. We need to help those who have invested into this community already. Why aren't we supporting the businesses that have put up so much money, time, and effort for so many years to now open it up to another developer? I think we really need to work on what we have.
I need to ask you a little bit about your blog, because that's the reputation that you, blog has really sort of established your reputation, your presence, particularly in Salisbury politics. And one of the things that I ran across, I don't think it's a correct quote, but you said that attacking people is not the best way to get things done. First of all, did you say that? And second of all, what did you mean by that? Why? Is that what your blog did, do you think, in the past?
Yeah, I think we made some mistakes, and I own up to some of those mistakes that we made. I don't know if that's the exact quote.
Yeah.
But it's pretty close to what I said. Yeah, in life you have to swallow some pride, Don. And I'm swallowing some pride. There's no question about it. What a lot of people don't realize is the past 20-plus business years of experience I've had as owning a manufacturing company. A lot of people know me as Joe Albero, who owns Salisbury News. What people have to realize is I retired at 40 for a reason. I ran a very, very good company, and it got to such a plateau that I chose, I'm done. I know what I'm doing. With Salisbury News, in the very beginning, we had to fight fire with fire at times. I was being sued by the mayor, sued by the chief of police, sued by the warden of the detention center, in which I won all those cases because I was right. But the picture was painted of me as being a very, very aggressive individual, when in fact, all I was trying to do was use my First Amendment right to educate the public, in which the local media would not do.
There have been suggested that some of these have been racially tinged, particularly the comments as opposed to necessarily the individual blog, although the Salisbury Daily Times pointed out to a particular game. But what about that? I mean, not just maybe you, but there are all these comments.
That was a site that your current mm-hmm. mayor, Jim Ireton, created.
Mm-hmm.
Challenged with that. And the interesting part about that was the two articles that were tagged as racist were written by African Americans. Jim Ireton didn't go long enough to read more on there to find out that they were the authors that are followed by tens of millions of people a day. They're huge. It wasn't anything we created. It was an article that we tagged to, two articles in particular, that were extremely educational. They were very, very well-written articles, but they were written by African Americans, yet Jim wants to tag me as a racist.
Let me ask you, because I only got about a minute left, how do you reach, with all this stuff, whether you think it's justified or not, how do you reach out to the African American community, which has obviously been influenced by...
Sure. Well, we've met with the NAACP. We've had at length conversations. We've discussed these particular issues and proved to them that these were not written by Joe Albero. And they agreed with me in the long run. There's no issue. Mary Ashanti at the NAACP doesn't believe Joe Albero is a racist at all. Not at all. We're working currently with my campaign with many of the African American people community. So we're okay there. It's just I think the media is bringing out something that's not there.
So are you optimistic you're going to win?
Absolutely. I'm going door to door. I've been to about 4,000 homes so far. I've had four people tell me they're voting for Jim Ireton out of 4,000 homes. You tell me.
Well, we were speaking with the challenger for mayor here in Salisbury, Joe Albero. He's challenging the incumbent, Jim Ireton, in what perhaps will be a very significant election come April 2nd. And, Joe, we appreciate you taking time to stop by and talk to us. You're listening to Delmarva Today, and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. And with next month's election for mayor of Salisbury, it could bring a major shift in local governments. The first half of the show, we talked to blogger Joe Albero. And the second half, we are talking to the incumbent mayor, Jim Ireton, who is seeking at least another second term, not a couple of years, actually, until they all sync up in terms of the elections. And he is, of course, the incumbent, has been in office for 4 years. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Good morning.
So let me ask you this. Sort of in general, you've had 4 years. What do you think you've accomplished in those 4 years? As I've particularly watched the city council and the mayors and the Salisbury, a lot of contention there. What do you think you've been able to accomplish in those 4 years?
Don, I wouldn't expect you to see anything but contention with the business that you're in, but I'll just say it to you like this with a smile on my face. You know, the Feldman's building is being redeveloped, the Linens of the Week office, the Linens of the Week building has come down, the Thrift Travel Inn has come down, the wastewater treatment lawsuit has been settled. Our crime rates in part ones are the lowest they've been in 4 years. They're down 40%, and they're lowest they've been in a decade since 2004. So what you may see as contention, I see as progress.
Why do you think you've been able to achieve as much as you have? And we'll get into some of the problems.
Many of these things that we're talking about are things that can be done on the administrative side, on the executive side, on the mayor side, you know, by itself. Some of those things we did together, of course, the wastewater treatment plant lawsuit, the council and the mayor were together lockstep on getting that taken care of, getting that done. I think that new department heads, a new public works director, a new chief of police, those things bring new and healthy and creative ideas to the table, and I'm willing to work with that. I mean, when you really look at it, you know, the barges coming out of the north prong of the river, that's one of the proudest things that I can remember over the last 4 years. The newest Creek Watchers report, Dr. Stribling from here at the university, and all the help that we get there, that's been excellent. All of the catch basins that are collecting trash before it goes into the river, the couple hundred of them that are now installed. Those are partnerships that we've made on the environmental side. There's partnerships that we've made on the law enforcement side. The dropping of the EDU for businesses by 60%. Brad Belichico, the former chairman of the Chamber of Commerce, saying the biggest thing to happen to Salisbury business in a couple of decades. That was done by myself and 4 other city council members, minus Mrs. Campbell. So, you know, I think there's a whole lot of stuff that has been excellent that is going. The Tenants' Bill of Rights is now law. That's something that the mayor and council did. 270-page downtown revitalization plan that I put out is out there waiting for work. Bateman Only Road getting done after 8 years. I think it's very easy for people in the media to go, what have you been doing? Let me tell you, I'm about 50 pounds more than I was. I have higher blood pressure than I did before, and I got a heck of a lot more gray hair. But that's because I can list these things for you and say that they've been done. Our city's population has increased 33% since the year 2000. So the sky is falling. Salisbury is a terrible place. It needs to be changed. Nothing gets done here. I don't think it's indicative of what the real population in Salisbury actually experiences.
Well, I'm going to get to some of the issues facing the city, but I also wanted to ask you particularly about the city council, because there has been, as a matter of fact, I think it was the Salisbury Daily Times described it as a culture of no. Do you think that's true?
Oh, no,
true?
That was me.
That was me. Okay. You take credit for that. So if you're reelected, yeah, how do you see yourself?
I'm going to be honest with you, Don, because I've never come in here and tried to smile through an answer for you. I've never tried to put on an air or gloss over anything for you. Jake Day needs to be the next Salisbury City Councilman. Let's just speak about that. Affordable housing at the Bricks, voted no by Mrs. Campbell. The downtown revitalization plan, no by Mrs. Campbell. Rates, dropping our rates for bulk parking users downtown, Mrs. Campbell said no. The firehouse downtown, Mrs. Campbell said, I don't care how long it stays empty. You know, we're going to switch this council majority and we're going to move forward. I mean, it's just that clear that we have things that we can do that can make us even more progressive and even move us further along. I appreciate all the work that Mrs. Campbell has done over the last 8 years. And I will say to your listeners to remember that I don't have a vote. So many of the things that I put forward that don't get a vote, I don't know what to tell you, except you need to change the people who are voting.
Now, the Salisbury has, an unemployment rate at the last I saw about 8.8%. And obviously, the way to alter that is by attracting new business.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things are you looking at to attract new business?
I was just at the Greater Salisbury Committee the other day. Let me tell you what we have done. Over the last 2 years, we've talked about a manufacturing tax exemption up to 100%, which is what the Chamber of Commerce, the Greater Salisbury, and many of our businesses have asked us to do. The Salisbury City Council was asked 9 times during the last budget cycle to take up a manufacturing tax exemption up to 100%. They refused to. each time. We talk about changing in the paving policy. Some of our developers have asked that we change the paving policy a little bit to make it less restrictive. That's been told no. We take a look at the EDU free zone downtown, which we're trying to create with the EDUs from the Linens of the Week building. That was told we were told no by the city council on that. We're going to come with some new stuff, a wastewater utility credit for high-end users of water, but low-end makers of wastewater, i.e. Pepsi and Cadista up in the industrial park, and Purdue. We're hoping that the new city council will give us a fair hearing on that coming up here in the next couple weeks. You know, all of these great ideas from the standpoint of the city executive have to get a vote. And if you have questions about why some of those things haven't been done and you're listening to this program, you really need to contact your legislators or find out where the people who are running for office stand.
Now, there was actually a recent piece in the Daily Times about vacant houses. Apparently, it's doubled over the last 10 years, I guess, in Salisbury.
There are 213 of them on the most recent list. The Daily Times, and God love them, they love to make a story out of something, hoping that they can, you know, they make it look like they're being fair to both candidates. Because it was supposed to be a story about vacant houses. In all actuality, what you in the media do is follow Mr. Albaro's website, which he gets to be a candidate and the journalist covering his candidacy. I think that's amazing. And then come to me with this question about vacant housing. We have 213 of them registered. Instead of going to the people who own the vacant house and saying, how long are you going to just get this house just a little bit above code compliant so nothing can happen to you? When are you going to redevelop this house so that it can be used in the way it was supposed to? Again, you come to the city and you ask, what is the city doing? Well, the city has a vacant housing registry. Mr. Stevenson, Mayor Tillman, in the previous administration, that's where that came from. We are on them. There's a saying for it. I won't use it on the radio. We're on them all the time about making sure that they are living up to what the expectations are of the code. If you believe that there should be more done for vacant houses, as I do, my receivership legislation that's working its way through, three strikes and you're out, all that stuff that's been sitting there, Don, for years, you need to talk to your legislators and find out why they're not doing anything about it. But I'm honest with you, Don.
Okay.
You know, the Daily Times sends me these questions. We're going to ask you about vacant houses, and you can go and you can look on Mr. Albaro's website that was the story the previous day. Instead of calling members of SOPOA who own these vacant houses, instead of calling members of the community who own these houses and saying, what are you doing? This is your house. Maryland is very strict with its property rights and what it allows property owners to do. My question to us is, do you want us to do more in terms of taking that property, because that's what they would do in other large major cities. They would take the property. You wouldn't be allowed to have that property sit there for that long. But you know, the rental industry is a $56 million, $60 million business a year here in Salisbury. And you know, the Eastern Shore is not normally a place where we go a whole lot in terms of taking people's property rights away from them. But I'm going to tell you, I think this municipality has done a damn good job of making sure that if you have a boarded up property, that we know about it, we know where it is, and we're going to make you keep it code compliant. But I can't make you fix it up and re-rent it again or sell it to better the neighborhood.
Now, I understand that about 60-some-odd percent of the housing stock is rental as opposed to occupied.
It's funny you asked me these questions. I remember when I was running, these were the things I was telling you. Yes, they are. And the reason they're like that is because we have huge multifamily unit developments that are out there. If you look behind the mall, 817 people in Runaway Bay. You have a Mill Pond Village that's opened up. What the city's been able to do is try and make sure that about 90% of our multifamily unit dwellings now have access to recycling. The market is going to take what the market is going to take. When I talked about rentals in 2009, I was talking about single-family rentals and that fight in our single-family neighborhoods that have undergone such change. Yes, the city is actually, it's going to be higher than your 60% number when you take into account those large multi-unit dwellings. The question comes down to, are we making sure that we are still incentivizing or getting people to come and live in our urban core? And when you take a look at the downturn in the economy, you take a look at the drop in assessable base, the people who do your assessable base tell you that it doesn't matter if the neighborhood is clean, if all the houses are home ownership. It doesn't matter if there's a police officer on every corner, every street light's on. None of that has anything to do with your assessment. It has to do with whether or not the house next door, the house around the corner, has sold. So I always say to them when the assessors come, and Mr. Pick will put his hand sort of on my shoulder like, easy, Jim. And I say, well, wait a second. So the assessable base went down, so all the people who would buy houses in my neighborhood in Johnson's Lake, teachers, firefighters, nurses, cops, they haven't been given a raise because the economy tanked and there was a downturn, so the assessment goes down. So those people don't get raises, so they don't buy houses. So then the assessor comes in and says, nobody's buying houses, so there's a lowering of the assessment. So you have this cycle of downturn. And all I want to know is who made all that profit right before that downturn, while the rest of our neighborhood suffer. Who got the 6% commission? What bank got all that money? And I have said to the assessors, and Mr. Pick is very funny when I do this, I'm like, tell me how that system works for working people in America. I mean, seriously, tell me how that works for working people in America. How does that work for working people in Salisbury who live in my neighborhood that do so much to try and make sure that our neighborhood is attractive for people to come and live? And all the things that we do have nothing to do with it until the house around the corner sells. And if it's not going to sell because there's an economic downturn, you get double smacked in that situation.
So I mean, is because when we first talked, we were there was a lot of discussion, and previous, certainly in the city council, a lot of talk about how to deal with the spread of rentals, particularly in the older neighborhoods, which mm-hmm. is really what we're talking about.
Right.
And we still apparently have a fairly still high number. I don't know whether it's increasing or not, right. given the economy, but nonetheless, right. they're still there, and I still hear people talk about them.
Yes. What I can tell you, the shift in what I decided to do was to attack the problem, A, from a legal standpoint, B, from a code standpoint. When we take a look, if amortization, which is something that both Mrs. Campbell and Mrs. Cohen wrote with me, they wrote the amortization statute and then walked away from it 2 years later.
Explain that.
Amortization is where a house that has been divided up into several units slowly makes its way back into single family status, which is what the state of Maryland wants us to do. So you have that. If amortization can't get through the legislative body, then what you have to do is you have to incentivize good behavior, or if there's such a word, de-incentivize bad behavior. And that's where three strikes legislation comes, and that's where lockout legislation is now that's come up. I have had those legislative items sitting on the agenda for this city council for 2.5 years. And all I can say to the people listening is, if you wanted something done with the house next door, if it was not performing up to your expectation, or it was causing a depreciation in your property value, or you weren't able to sleep, or your kids weren't able to go to school because there were bad people around, you need to talk to your legislators, because they didn't do anything about it. And you and I both know my amortization, my three strikes law, everything in every press release I've sent you over the last 3 years, especially with how long I've been waiting for some of that Safe Streets legislation to get through. All I can tell people is, you have a vote coming up in a couple of weeks, and I would appreciate your vote, but I'm going to tell you the more important vote here is sitting right in that city council race.
Let me ask you, there's been concern, and I've heard some complaints, but certainly your opponent, Mr. Obaros, expressed it earlier, the idea that the city itself tends to be unfriendly to business, in the sense of, if you apply
every
for
business person
apply,
says every business person that. Every business person says that somebody is unfriendly to them.
No,
You know, we are tasked with making sure that what's built in our city, whether it be water and sewer lines, whether it be houses, whether it be buildings, that they have to be co-compliant and they have to be safe for people. We live in Maryland, a highly restrictive state. We are also tasked with making sure that stormwater issues are taken care of. Grading, paving, all of those things. We talked a little bit about this at the Greater Salisbury Committee. You know, for every one person who comes in and says, well, for every five people that come in and say that they didn't get, that they weren't treated well, 2.5 of them is because they didn't get what they want. And that's a whole different scenario, because I can't just say to you, oh, you don't have to pay that fee, or you don't have to do that regulation. I don't have that ability to do that on the administrative side. Those things would have to be passed both at my level and the state level. So I think for every 10 people that come in, I think five people are fine, and they say that they've been treated well, and they're treated fairly and fast. The other part about it is, I mean, you talk about a dropping. It bothers me that the story is not that Salisbury dropped its capacity fees by 60% and went from the third highest on the Delmarva Peninsula to the second lowest. Why is the business going, hey, that's a great thing? Because the default mode is to complain. Because in the end, it is profit that is the most important. And I don't want to take anything away from anybody. Good for you. That's your job. You got your job. I have mine. And I'm going to protect our citizens, the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. And I'm going to employ the law and make sure that the law and the code are enforced.
Do you think there's maybe sometime too much delay? That's been certainly some of the things.
No, Mr. Albaro. In fact, if you want to go there, I have it.
Express
from,
that,
from
that,
his
that earlier
where he made his announcement at DW Burt out in the industrial park. You know, we can go down the whole. From September,
wait a second.
From September 2009, we discovered that Mr. Burt was building something, never got the permits, never got the plans approved, so automatically wasn't following the rules to begin with. And I can go down this list of everything we did for him and how the last time we spoke to him, Salisbury Public Works okayed the plat that he needed approved on April 4th, 2012, and the plat has never been resubmitted by Mr. Burt for reconsideration so that he can move forward with this project. I'm not going to sit here and let somebody take pot shots at my employees when they didn't follow the rules to begin with. But I think that in every situation, you're going to have people who find, you're going to have people listen to Delmarva Public Radio and go, ah, that's awful, and you're going to have people for whatever reason, and they can come in here and say to you, I think it's awful because the lighting's bad. But then you have to report it. But your default mode is that if somebody's complaining about something, you're more apt to report it than somebody who's not complaining about it. And I think that is indicative of the situation we find ourselves in. So you want to report good stuff, I'll send you the good stuff. You want to find somebody who just wants to complain, I'm sure that's easy for you to do.
One of the issues that came up was particularly about policy in terms of communicating with the department heads of the city and so on. And I think it was the Daily Times had a piece about
well, thank
your
God they do
your,
their pieces.
And they keep on copy there. And I think it's a quote out of the paper says something about Ireton.
Oh, they
the
were afraid to be fired, wasn't it?
On a case by case basis, whether he will ultimately grant a reporter's request to speak to a particular employee or answers the question himself. What about this? Is there a tight policy? And if so, what's going on here?
There are three reasons why this policy is in place. Too many times over the last 4 years, and you'll remember this from the wild and woolly days of Chief Webster leaving, the Daily Times would get privileged and confidential information that had to do with an employee, and they would print it, and they would call the office, and they'd say, hey, it's Christmas time for us. We got something we're not supposed to have. And you would enjoy it, too, if you got something you weren't supposed to have that gives you the scoop. I really love the high-mindedness of your questions because being in the industry, I find that to be very, very funny on your behalf. But there are three reasons why you come through my office. And one is, A, to protect my employees, because in order to get a scoop, no one in the journalism field is going to worry about my employees if they think they can get a scoop. So it is to protect them. And I've also found that what you find in the media is that they're trying to get my employee to say one thing and me to say something else, because that's always fun. Let's see if we can get... So let's create a problem for these people when there was no problem there. And the other real reason is that in the end, like unlike Wicomico County, who has a public information officer, we don't have one of those. The office right outside of mine, my executive assistant for the last 6 years, 7 years, that position was supposed to be reclassified to a public information officer, and the city council has never decided to do that. So you get what you get, and that's the way the policy is going to be. I'm going to protect my employees. I'm going to protect the city from what most of the time, as I deal with feral cats up north and I deal with beavers in the park, is media-generated stories from my opponent's website, because he's a journalist and a politician. And I'm sorry, but Dom, the people in your business bite it hook, line, and sinker like a fish on the side of the boat. And I'm not gonna play the game with you.
Now, you've also proposed, or at least the Chief Duncan has proposed a proposal that, make sure this is characterized right. There's a proposal that would at least allow the ability to shut down perhaps a business after two police reports within 2 years. First of all, what's motivating behind that? And two, and I can imagine a business person saying, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's just like
go ahead.
It's just like three strikes. We go to the same places over and over and over again, and it's not a good use of our resources. Those resources need to be spread out equally throughout the city in commercial and in residential. I think that's going to change a little bit. I think that number is going to go up a little bit. But in the end, if we're going back to the same bar fight, play at the same bar for the same fight weekend after weekend after weekend, My officers have other things that they need to be doing to protect the rest of our citizens. And I am in this particular case going to put people over profits and say that sending people to the same place over and over again is just not a good allocation of resources, especially when between certain hours we know, you know, where we're going to have to go every time. And no one seems to worry about it. No, you know, the place still opens, whether it's a bar, regardless of what it is, you know, gullies over next to the Giant. You know how hard I've had to come down on that time after time again. But somebody's making some money somewhere, Don. And I can say that there are other parts of our city that also need police protection, and we can't keep going to the same place over and over. I think that legislation will change a little bit.
Be a little more, but less restrictive. Maybe,
I don't know. Perhaps, it depends on whether or not you think a cop going to the same place time and time and time and time again should be less restrictive or more restrictive.
I guess the thing that
you sound like a city council
person
debating me instead of a journalist interviewing me.
It's okay. two police reports in 2 years. I think that's too restrictive, maybe?
Maybe a little bit, but I'm going to yield to Barbara Duncan on this because she's lived other places and she's had to deal with places that end up with violence and fights and gunshots, because once a place gets a reputation, it's not going to get better. I mean, let's be clear about that. It's just like a house that starts out with weeds and peeling paint and shingles that are falling off. Eventually, that's going to lead to something else. That's fixing broken windows. That is scientific data. That's not something we're inventing here in Salisbury. In fact, many of these things are done all across the country. And if we think that it's just happening in Salisbury here during our lifetime, we are mistaken.
I want to ask you, by the way, about the crime stats, because you mentioned a moment ago that there was a dramatic drop. Mm-hmm. But as I understand it, that there is still a problem with burglaries, that kind of thing.
It's burglaries and theft. Around. Yep. Amazingly, if you think about it, what we've gone through in the last 10 years, I mean, every one of those part ones are at the lowest they've been in a decade. What you see at this point is that the real violent ones have leveled off. What you have is, because of the economic downturn, you have theft being... And I'll be honest with you, Don, the chief will tell you, we are working very hard with our partners in the commercial districts of the city to reduce the amount of shoplifting that we have. We're working very hard to get major employers and major outlets to prosecute, to go to court, because it's just like what we talked about with the bar fights before. It's the same people stealing the same stuff over and over again. And we're working with our Safe Streets Retail Alliance to make sure that people will get into court so that we can get somebody. We can say to a judge, this is the 18th time this person needs to be held accountable. Every shoplifting, every time someone steals something out of a car, we do our knock and talks with our police officers, and we're checking every shed and every window and every door and every car, every house, to show people that even though it's 2013 and even though our crime rates have dropped, they can help us reduce the theft numbers by doing the simple things that we expect that everybody's doing already, when in all actuality, that's not the case.
By the way, what I want to ask you, because we touched a little bit on this, Lenders of the Week, the BRICS, what do you see as the future, particularly for the BRICS? I mean, I went out and talked to a lot of the folks who actually live in the Church Street area, because we did a piece a year or so ago. Lots of concern about that. I know what happened with the city council, because the city council decided to turn down one of the options.
I know.
Where are we?
You know,
where
this, are we this is this? What's so great about this particular situation. I don't mean to harp back on it, because it – but I was told if you get that to a zero-sum amount of money for the city – that the city council members would support it. And I did that. I worked with Homes for America. I worked with every single solitary group that was involved with that to make that a zero-sum investment for city taxpayers. And then I got the flip-flop vote, and it was no. When you take a look at Linens and you take a look at the BRICS, one of the reasons that the BRICS was a little bit more expensive than I think people liked is because it's in what is called the Church Street Historic District, which honestly, before I was mayor, I never knew it existed. But we are in need. I think the thing that's frustrating is that behind closed doors, the council president will strike a deal on River's Edge, which is going to be leveled income housing. It's going to be subsidized housing. But across the street, you know, at the BRICS, it was, I think sometimes what happens is that if one person can't be in control of everything, they're going to hold up all of the agenda And I think that's really what's happened here. I think that the vote on the new city council will be that Habitat for Humanity should take the property at Linens of the Week. We should tear down the other side. I think that's already in our community development block grant application. And 6 or 7 or 8 more home ownership opportunities in Church Street, which can only be good for that neighborhood.
By the way, what do you see for downtown? You've been struggling a lot. The city has for years been struggling with revitalization of downtown.
I don't know.
And where is it going?
I think with a new city council majority, that 270-page plan will be done. I think things are happening organically. On a third Friday, you can sit at the intersection of Route 13 and Main Street, and there's not a parking space all the way up to the plaza. I think that's great. If you take a look at the city center, now almost 90% filled, first time in 30 years. I think a lot of stuff is happening. Main Roots Coffee. Out of the mouth of babes, let me tell you, the kid who opened it was on television the other night, and they said, what are you doing differently to make it successful? And he says, I'm open from 9 to 6, I'm open from 9 to 6. And you just say, I think a new generation of people are coming, and you take a look at some of the churches that have opened there. You take a look at the recording studio that's there. Look how quickly Aqua turned over to Roadie Joe's. That's an important piece. Look how quickly the bakery, the deli turned over into the cupcake shop. I think all of those things are good for us. But in the end, the city has to do something with their surface parking lots, has to do something to bring more people living downtown and working downtown. And we have a parking garage that has upwards of 450 spaces a day left for people to be downtown and to live and to work and to play.
Real quickly, you think you're going to win?
I think that the citizens of Salisbury know that I get up every day and I barrel at 110% on all of these issues. And I know that sometimes it hasn't been the prettiest over the last couple years, but I'm never going to stop making the case that we're not as good as we can be yet. Don, I think that this is the crossroads of Delmarva. Between 150 and 175,000 people come in here each day, and there must be a reason. And I would just ask that you and the media find a way to be happy about it sometime over the next 2 years. So I appreciate the time today.
I appreciate you coming in. We've been speaking with Mayor Jim Ireton, who is running for re-election. Also in the first half, we had his challenger, blogger Joe Albero. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Cora Mitchell is our volunteer producer. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.